Welcome to the Blister Podcast, a program dedicated to interesting people, the great outdoors, and a bunch of other stuff we like camouflage fat bikes with lawnmower engines. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, the founder of Blister, and you can check us out online at blisterreview.com. Today on the podcast, we are live on location in Las Vegas, Nevada for Interbike 2017, and I am joined by our bike editor, Noah Bodman, to talk about the current state of Interbike, aka the weirdness that is Interbike. We discuss the most intriguing bikes we rode, the most interesting products we've seen, and the most bizarre, unbelievable stuff to grace the trade show floor. And so, without further ado, here is the latest, greatest, and strangest of Interbike 2017. Hey everybody, greetings from lovely Las Vegas. We are live here following day three of Interbike. This is the largest bike show in North America, and this is the first Interbike that I have actually ever attended. I'm here with our bike editor, Noah Bodman. This is not his first Interbike. But Noah, it is sort of impossible to talk about Interbike this year without sort of discussing the current state of Interbike and like the role and relevance of trade shows in the digital era, I would say. What's going on at Interbike this year?
Yeah, so Interbike, it's kind of small this year. There's, we're here, both of us, and there's a couple other people here. There's like at least three or four companies here. No, Interbike, it's a bit smaller than last year, which was a bit smaller than the year before that, which was a bit smaller than the year before that. So it's hard not to notice a gradual decline. And the thing that's maybe the most noticeable this year is just that there's a lot less attendees. There's less people from shops. There's less people, I guess, from the media. So it feels a little empty this year. And the big news is that it's moving to Reno, Nevada, next year. It's been in Las Vegas for quite a few years, as long as I can remember. And now it's moving to Reno. So I've been taking an informal poll as to whether that means Interbike's going to get a kickstart next year and be back up and running and everybody's going to be interested in it again, or if it's going to be the final nail in the coffin and that's going to be the end of it.
Yeah, and I got to say, I mean, as a first-time attendee, I am not necessarily the biggest fan of Las Vegas, but I got to say, like, Interbike in Vegas seems to work pretty well. We were at the outdoor demos the last 2 days, and there's some really good riding around Bootleg Canyon, and we were impressed with the trails. And then just the convenience of getting to the trade show at Mandalay Bay, it all kind of works. And so just seeing this operation on a logistical level, it's certainly not obvious to me that things will automatically get better in Reno. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, the trails in Bootleg Canyon, I think, are a ton of fun. Before I ever started going to Interbike, I've been down there riding the trails. And, I mean, as far as the show being at Mandalay Bay, I can't really speak to that. I think Jonathan's been paid off by Mandalay Bay just to name drop the convention center in this podcast. But they are paying me zero. It is a very nice hotel. I recommend you all stay there. It's an excellent value, and you should go to all the restaurants. we're staying in the Luxor. It's a little more affordable, but it has a giant spotlight at the top of a triangle.
It does.
And, you know, you can't beat that.
You know what I like most about that? It reminds me of Kanye West's Ultra Light Beam.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I think this is some sort of pop culture reference. So, anyways, the long and short of it is I flew to Las Vegas for $49.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be able to fly to Reno for $49. And I'm guessing that there's a lot of other people in this country that can also fly to Vegas for really cheap, but not to Reno for really cheap.
Yeah. And I'm in the same boat. I mean, tickets to Las Vegas are cheap for me. It will definitely be more expensive to fly to Reno. But one of the things that we are hearing is that this ought to be cheaper moving to Reno. It ought to be a much more affordable situation for exhibitors. And so the real question and sort of wager here, I think, is that maybe by making this more affordable for the exhibitors, we will actually get more exhibitors at the show.
The other thing I've heard is that Reno does not have a shark reef, which Mandalay Bay does. They have a giant fucking shark tank with, like, I don't know what kind of sharks in it. I think they're just, like, huge sharks. And that's a great value. So if you are staying at Mandalay Bay, you should go to the shark reef tank, because it is easily the finest experience in Las Vegas. We highly recommend it.
I haven't been yet. I don't know what he's talking about. I think Mandalay Bay has clearly paid him off. But
Jonathan, I have a picture of him taking a picture of the sign for Shark Reef because he was so excited about it.
That's true.
Tomorrow, Thursday, we're skipping the show. We're going to Shark Reef.
I think it's called the Shark Aquarium. Are you sure there's a reef?
I'm pretty sure it's a reef. I think it's the last remaining reef on the planet. I just saw a thing that Al Gore had, like, destroyed the last remaining reef in Australia or something like that.
Oh, man.
Does that get cut?
No, it doesn't. It's too late to cut any of this. Reno. And I mean, again, as a first-time attendee of Interbike, I gotta say, walking onto the showroom floor today, the craziest thing about Interbike is that it seemingly should just be called e-bike. That's you can't understate that, really, or overstate that, I should say. It is a ton of e-bikes on the floor. It is like an e-bike convention.
I would take a wager that there are more e-bikes on the floor than pedal bikes.
I think that's right.
And this has been like a gradual trend that we've seen over the last few years. E-bikes have come on pretty quick. I'd say maybe the first ones were 3 or 4 years ago that we really saw, at least in any kind of production-ready, like non-hobbled-together kind of form. And now they're everywhere. Now, like, half the trade show is e-bikes. And, I mean, from a commuter perspective, that's kind of cool. Yeah. If I want to get to work and not be super sweaty when I get there,
yep,
then the e-bikes make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
From a mountain off-road perspective, that gets a little more complicated. But there are a lot of those on the floor, too. And so, but those are the new companies. When you look around the trade show floor, Specialized isn't there, Trek isn't there, Giant isn't there, Kona's not there.
Yeah.
Like, those are all companies that they've got their brand and they're established, and they don't really need a trade show like this anymore to keep up their brand approval or whatever you want to call it. But these e-bike manufacturers, they're kind of coming out of nowhere. So they're doing everything they can at these sort of trade shows to push their products.
Yeah, and I think that is the big takeaway. Like, I found myself thinking today, like, if aliens came down to Interbike, certainly if they came down with the perspective of, like, oh, apparently here's where, like, a bunch of mountain bike stuff is happening, they would just assume that mountain bikes all have, like, lawnmower engines in them. But if you look at this from the point of view of the established mountain bike companies have just found that they don't need to be here, then yeah, what Noah's talking about is, so what you have instead are all these newer companies or older companies that are now trying to push into this category of electric bikes. That's what is at this show. Noah, what...
Jonathan, they're not lawnmower engines. You have to pedal.
Okay.
They're pedal assist lawnmowers.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear on that. It's way different than a normal lawnmower. You have to pedal.
So who would you say, name like two or three of the biggest sort of people making non-motor having mountain bikes, who are the two or three biggest companies that were on the showroom floor today?
So companies that we were looking at, non-motor having companies that we were looking at, Pivot is there. They're one of the only actual bike producing non-pedal or non-motor having companies that we see on the floor. We rode their 5.5, Mach 5.5 at the demo on Monday, and that's a pretty fun bike. Other than that...
On the showroom floor, so not talking about the demo, but today.
On the showroom floor, there's KHS, Bulls. No, well, Bulls is mostly motor having these days. Some nice motor having bikes, but...
Wow, you're stalling out.
I'm stalling out.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the thing. I mean, in terms of e-commuter bikes, there's a ton of them, and like, that's cool. But for those of you who would be coming to Interbike to look at what was going on from mountain bike manufacturers, short answer is not so much.
S&M was there. They don't make mountain bikes. They make pretty nice BMX bikes.
Okay.
So, they were next to the scooters. There's a lot of non-motor having scooters.
So we're going to get back to the showroom floor, but let's back up for a second. The last 2 days, we were at the outdoor demo.
Yeah.
I may or may not have been pedaling around in a neck brace.
Yep.
But I was wearing a helmet.
He was being very safe. He didn't turn his head even once.
While crossing roads?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on quickly. From the outdoor demo, Noah, what were one of the, like, one or two most interesting things you were riding?
Yeah, so before we get to that, Jonathan was pedaling around in a full neck brace. He wasn't able to look around anywhere. It was hazardous, but in case Jonathan's doctor is listening to this, I just want you to know he was very safe about it. I watched out for him. I let him know if anybody was coming in a cross traffic direction, and he didn't fall over more than twice. And so, back to your question. Brands that we rode, like I said, we rode a Pivot Mach 5.5, pretty fun bike, 27.5 wheels with some like mid fat tires, whatever you want to call it, 2.6s. But the interesting bikes, the most interesting bikes that we rode at this demo, first we rode a Zeroed Tanifa. That is not how it's spelled, but that is how it's pronounced. And it's got a gearbox, pretty weird bike in terms of shifting, no derailleur, no cassette, all internal gearbox stuff with a grip shift. And yeah, it's a different riding experience.
So back up just a second. First of all, Zeroed, in case people don't know, this is a company out of...
New Zealand.
Out of New Zealand. And what's the big deal about this gearbox?
Well, Zeroed's been doing gearbox, internally geared bikes for quite a while. They started kind of on the downhill side of things, but now this Tanifa is more of like a trail bike, so it's meant to actually go uphill. That's a new thing, relatively new thing for Zeroed. And it's pretty interesting. We're going to write a bit more about it, so without wading into all the nitty-gritty technical details, the long and short of it is that it's super low maintenance because you don't have a derailleur, you don't have any kind of exposed drivetrain, you've got a bunch of gears that are all mangled up in this little box that's clustered around the bottom bracket, and it's a pretty clean design. Downsides are A, you're dealing with a grip shift that I haven't ridden a grip shift since like the 90s. And it doesn't shift all that cleanly under load. So it takes a little getting used to, and it takes some practice in how to shift it. The upsides are you can shift without pedaling. You can shift just sitting there on the bike without spinning the pedals. And so once you kind of figure it out, there's some huge upsides there. And the other upside is that you don't have a drives train hanging off your bike. So it's super clean, it's super quiet, and there's way, way less unsprung mass on the rear end of the bike. And without getting into all the physics and forces and momentum arguments, it basically just means the suspension works really, really well. And that's the first thing that was immediately obvious in my relatively short amount of time on this bike. So that was a pretty interesting one. The other interesting one that we rode was the Marin Wolf Ridge. Honestly, Marin isn't a company that I really think of when it comes to leading edge, interesting suspension designs. But they've got this new Wolf Ridge. It's using a suspension design that's also being used by Polygon. So we saw some pretty good results on the Polygon bikes in the World Cup downhill season. But yeah, it's got this kind of crazy multiple pivot with a telescoping shaft design. And the long and short of it is that it has a fair amount of travel. It has, I think, 180 millimeters of travel, but it has more like trail bike angles. So it rides like a, in terms of stability and maneuverability, it rides like a shorter travel bike. But in terms of bump sucking abilities, it rides like it has 180 millimeters of travel because it has a lot of travel.
Fair enough. Okay, so those were a couple of the highlights from the outdoor demo. What were a couple of the things you saw that was most noteworthy from the showroom floor today?
So, well, we talked about e-bikes a little bit. That was pretty noteworthy. Of particular note, if you want to go hunting on an e-bike, particularly hunting on an e-fat bike, then you have quite a few options.
This is like the golden era. Like, if that's what you are about, yeah, there's never been a better time to be alive.
Yeah, I think road bikes, mountain bikes, commuters, gravel grinders, all of that, I think, is on the downslope.
Yep.
E-hunting fat bikes, that is, like, we have... I don't know if we're at the pinnacle yet, because we're going to have to wait a year maybe to see what happens next year, because we can only realistically go up from where we are. But there's a lot of pretty hot options in the camouflage bike market.
You took today picture. We were sort of joking about doing a photo gallery of all the e-hunting fat bikes.
Wait, we were joking?
And I think you got to at least like 10 or 11 or 12 photos from like different companies.
Literally every direction I pointed my camera. Like, I was just like taking a picture of like some random person walking in front of me, and there it is. There's an E camouflage fat bike in the background. I mean, now, it's almost impossible to not take a picture of a camouflage fat bike at this show.
So one, it's crazy that apparently, as of today, this is a thing in the world, the e-camouflage
hunting. Wait, you weren't aware of this?
I was not.
It's been a huge thing since August.
But the other thing here is, we really were perplexed. Like, let's say you are a big e-hunting fat bike guy, and you go out into the woods.
Wait, you're not an e, like a huge e-hunting
fat? No, I'm not. But like, let's say you are, and you go out and you get your game, but you laid your camouflage bike down somewhere, like, you will never find that thing again.
Yeah, that's why there's so many of them.
Anyway, seriously, the point is, if you try to be on top of the trends, this, we can't stress this enough, this is the trend. that you need to know about, and so you can tell all your buddies at the pub that this is the next thing, apparently. So if that is clearly the noteworthy trend of this Interbike, let's move on to some like interesting specific products that you saw that maybe aren't camouflage or fat bike or e-fat bikes.
I mean, the nice thing about e-camouflage fat bikes is that you can put other products on them.
True.
So you could put, for instance, a nice new coil ribbon fork from MRP. It's pretty sweet. I haven't ridden it yet, so maybe that's a bit ahead of the game. But they've 10 years ago, everything moved from coil to air forks. Now we're moving back. More people are riding coil because they've realized that they're a little more supple. They ride nice over small bumps. So MRP has got a new fork that's a coil fork. I think X-Fusion has some stuff as well. I need to go peruse their booth a little more thoroughly. But all of these forks, luckily, will fit on your e-camouflage fat bike.
Sick.
And so after you've tagged that buck and you've lost your bike, you can leave your nice, nice new fork to rust out in the wilderness while you walk your ass back to your car with your 300 pounds of meat that you've just gutted in the woods.
This is your future, ladies and gentlemen. If you're a real mountain biker or something.
Next year, I predict e-camouflage cargo bikes to haul your buck back. So at least, you know, you'll think it's a good idea before you lose your bike in the woods because it's still camouflage.
Any other specific items?
There's a few odds and ends that are marginally interesting. Nothing, honestly, that's super groundbreaking. The general sense that I've gotten from companies is Interbike / this time of year is not really the time that they're debuting new and exciting products. So there's been a few companies that have mentioned that there might be something exciting coming next spring. They tend to name drop Sea Otter. So maybe this is wrapping back around to, are we putting the nail in Interbike's coffin? I'm not sure if we're there yet, but it sure seems like as far as new product releases, nobody's doing it in mid-September.
Yeah. So, I mean, that obviously begs a pretty important question. Like, if we were running Interbike, should we just aggressively be looking to pick a different date? Like, how about let's not do it in mid-September?
Well, and you've got trade shows like Eurobike that was a couple weeks before Interbike, and now it sounds like they're moving to sometime in July, so they're moving even earlier. And I think it really comes down to there is no perfect time of year to do these things. There's different companies have different product cycles, and different companies release new products at different times of the year. And it depends. The component manufacturers are coming out at products at one time of year because they need to have products ready to go on the next year's bikes. And then the bike manufacturers are coming out with products at a different time of year. And then there's bike manufacturers that have no coherent timeline, and they come out with new bikes when they're ready to come out with new bikes, which honestly makes a lot of sense. So, it's a huge mess. And I sure wouldn't want to be the one that was scheduling a trade show around this crap. So kudos out to whoever runs Interbike, because they have a thankless and terrible job.
Well, on that note, it seems like we found a good place to stop. And we are going to try to get some sleep before going and digging around on the showroom floor a bit more tomorrow. And we will soon start reporting on some more of the things that we've seen. So check the website for that. But I think we call that good, Noah.
Yeah, we'll have a gallery of literally hundreds of pictures of e-camouflage
hunting fat bikes.
Yep. Yeah.
We need to come up with the cool acronym for that, but maybe that's something to think on after the podcast here.
This is Blister's hard-hitting coverage of Interbike.
Yep. Have fun. We'll talk to you guys later. We're going to think of some acronyms. Bye-bye.
That's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. Thanks to Noah for the conversation and to our strikingly handsome audio engineer, Justin Bob. Till next time, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and don't forget to become a Blister member to ensure that you'll get your copy of our upcoming 1718 Winter Buyer's Guide. Plus, get access to all of the flash reviews and deep dive comparison articles we publish on Blister, and get access to all of those exclusive deals we set up for Blister members. Thanks, and we will talk to you next time.